The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Friday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, some talented freshmen find out that if you don't pass your classes, you can't pass the ball. Has there really been some magic in Orlando this year, or just an optical illusion? And come Saturday night on the college basketball hardwoods, we have one basketball Jones that's going to be singing a sad tune.
Singing a sad tune, Dave. You're not singing a sad tune on a Friday morning. And I'm sure you have a first take, something you saw last night that you want to share with our viewing audience.
I might be singing a sad tune later in the day if I didn't do my homework. Now, we talk about postmortems all the time, about breaking down coaches, breaking down players, breaking down teams and results. You also need to postmortem yourself every once in a while. And we're going to get to this in Money Time when we talk about the Lakers-Orlando game. When I watched it last night and then went to bed, I had a particular take on something there that I thought was going to be meaningful today. The take was wrong. What I thought I saw, I really didn't. Something happened, but it happened for different reasons than what I was projecting. We'll talk about that a little bit later on the show today, but don't be afraid to do postmortems on your own takes and your own thought processes. It's tough enough to win when you're right because of the way the ball bounces, but it's brutal winning when you're wrong. I know what last night was in the Savransky household, and I guess now everybody else will, won't they?
What was last night, Dave?
Last night, I heard, was date night.
Yeah, you know, you have to do it every once in a while. Kara and I, you know, once a week.
You have to or you want to?
I don't want to, but well, at least one night a week. I promise Kara, hey, I'll get you out of the house. We'll go do something. And during football season, it's usually on Tuesdays, sometimes on Wednesdays. Basketball season, either Mondays is usually a good night or Thursday. So last time we went out on Thursday, bottom line. So, you know, women, I mean, Kara drives me nuts sometimes. You know, that's inevitable. But she's also really cool sometimes. For date night last night, Kara allowed me to take her to the MGM poker room and play poker. And not only is that a date, I get credit for a date for going out and playing cards. I sat her down in a 4-8 game, gave her $100, go lose it, do what you do. And I could sit in the sports book and watch my games on date night last night. Dude, it's beautiful. So, Kara, women, whoever, in this industry especially, very hard to find someone who can deal with the lifestyle. Kara deals with the lifestyle. Two thumbs up, hon. Thanks. Good time last night at the MGM. And, of course, you know, I was sweating out the Colorado game. I don't know if sweating out was the right word, but when you're sitting in the sports book, so many games on. You know, at home, I'm watching on 3 TVs. The sports book, you're watching on 9 TVs. Your eyes are like, doot, 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 doot. But sweating out the Colorado game, no sweat at all, Dave. Easy cash, and that transitions us right into Market Watch, because this Sunday, a monster in the Las Vegas sports books, not only for the handle that's going to be generated by the conference championships, but also one of the unique moments of the season. The setting of the Super Bowl line. And it's quite a moment. As that line comes up, you're going to see global activity. You're watching a live odd screen. I use sports options. You're watching that. And boom, 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 boom. You're seeing the numbers come up, get bounced into shape. It's kind of neat and kind of fun to watch right when those numbers come out. But as part of that anticipation, we're always playing along, of course. And we want to be ready to strike quickly if we see a mistake. And a mistake can be made. Even on a game of this magnitude, we're talking about the opening number, despite the fact, you know, all these teams have been under heavy scrutiny since last August, but This line is a little bit different because the Super Bowl line may be the only line, the only point spread in all of sports that legitimately has to take public opinion and public money into the equation. And that's what makes the Super Bowl line unique, and that's what makes it fun to talk about, Dave. So what's it going to be this year? We have four potential matchups. Let's start New England versus San Fran. And let's assume here that when we're talking about the favorites, that they win close to the point spread. Let's say the Patriots win by 7 or 10, somewhere in that range, or the Niners win by a field goal or 6 or something like that. For the dogs, we'll assume that they win a competitive game, not a blowout. So we're going to say the projections are at least close to the numbers that for this week's point spreads. So, Patriots-Niners, what do you make the number?
The number is probably supposed to be around 4, 4.5. I think they're going to probably have to go closer, though, maybe to a 6, again, with a public perception brought in. I'll hang 4.5. I'll let somebody bet it up if they want to.
Yeah, I'm thinking 6.5 on that game. I don't think San Fran is going to attract that public support like New England will. The Patriots are the public team or would be the public team in that matchup. The books will have to adjust. I don't think it goes as high as a touchdown, but I say 6.5 for New England over San Fran. Now, New England and the Giants is an interesting question. Because the Giants come in, obviously they beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl a couple years ago. That's going to get factored in the equation. You have the Giants being red hot with the three straight the road wins to get to the postseason, the four straight must-win games. I would say a Patriots-Giants Super Bowl, we'd look New England -3, maybe -120 or 125. I think that would be a tough one for the bookmakers because it would be bouncing between 3 and 3.5 throughout the entirety of the 2 weeks before the Super Bowl. What do you say, Dave?
We're going to probably say about 4.
A little bit higher.
Again, shading the Patriots just a little bit because if they win this week, off the way they destroyed Denver, there is going to be that perception. Belichick, Brady, Magic, a little more sex appeal, even though the Giants will have had a monster 5-week run. So I'll say about a 4.
All right. So you're a little bit lower with Giants San Fran, a little bit higher with New England and the Giants. Baltimore San Francisco. Let's assume we got a matchup of Harbaugh versus Harbaugh. You go first this time. What do you make this number?
Let's go Baltimore 1.
That's what I have written down over here. Baltimore 1. That's my number as well. So
I wasn't reading that. I didn't mean to cheat. Baltimore 1.
Now, what about Baltimore versus the Giants? I think the Giants come favored in that game, and I think they might come favored fairly significantly. I'd say Giants 2.5 if they play the Ravens in the Super Bowl.
I think maybe more 1, 1.5. But I do agree that if they get through to this level, there's a little more sex appeal to the Giants. Again, as we talked about with Baltimore yesterday on Money Time, there's just no sex appeal there. You know, they win not for what they do right, but because of what they don't do wrong. Public will not recognize that. I think Giants won.
All right, so there's a synopsis of what we might see come late Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening back there on the East Coast when the Super Bowl lines come out. Just something to think about as those lines come up later on this weekend. Now, before we head on to analysis of the weekend's action, let's go to the forums. We got a solid question from Top 5 Guy. I want to read that for you, Dave. Top 5 Guy asks, if you bet a game you like and then the line moves 2 to 3 points in your favor, do you recommend riding the bet out or betting the other side to lock in some profit and or reduce risk? Certain shops allow you to move spreads to plus big bets so you can move the line on the other team back to the original spread and lock in a profit that way. Or you could just try the middle of the game. I guess my question is it better to guarantee yourself a small profit, or is it generally better to let the bet play out since the odds movement suggests you have a good chance of winning that wager?
The equation's a real simple one, and yet we see people screw this up time and time again. In sports betting itself, there is no such thing as a hedge. Don't even bring the word up. Doesn't exist. In life, there is a hedge. If you have bills, you have to pay Monday. And you've got action this weekend, and you must come away with a profit, then you do that for your lifestyle. But in betting, there's only one aspect to this. Has the line move created a positive wager the other way? Has nothing to do with your original bet. It's tempting to say, well, it opened 6, now it's 9, I can lock something in. But not if taking the 9 is just making a bad bet. If it's got a low expectancy, you're just making a mistake that will catch up in the long run. So here's what you ask yourself when that line reaches 9. Do I have a better than 53% chance of winning this plus 9? Forget about the fact that you laid 6. The 9 in and of itself is a separate entity. Is this 53% or better? If it is, you bet it. If it isn't, doesn't matter what that original event is, stick to your first bet. Because if a game goes from 6 to 9 and the 9 doesn't work, that means your 6 is real good. So why throw something good away? That's a mistake we see people do. And so many times we see people do this at halftime. They make a good bet. Their team is way ahead. So they see this thing, oh, I can hedge a little bit here. No, don't make the mistake of thinking you're locking in a profit when instead all you might be doing is making a low expectancy wager. It's going to cost you in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, that's the bottom line. You do not want to turn a win into a push. You got a good bet, hold it. If you don't think it's good anymore, come back the other way. Great question, Top Guy. We appreciate it. And please keep those emails coming. We're doing our best to answer as many good questions as we can on air every day. That email address, sportsday@covers.com. Of course, you're going to ask us questions on Twitter and follow us, of course, on Twitter. Why haven't you done that yet? Come on, @VegasSportsDay. And, of course, get involved, man. Get involved. There's active threads and discussion going right now. Make a forum post. Make two. Rip somebody. Rip us. Get it done. Covers.com/posting forum. And last but not least, got to pump the Super Bowl party every single day because you guys should be here. It's Vegas in February. Where else would you rather be? Friday night before Super Bowl, free party at Caesar's Palace, the Shadow Bar right across from the Sportsbook. You want to come? All you have to do is send an email, RSVP, to party@covers.com, and we'll see you, heck, just a couple weeks away now. In fact, 2 weeks from today.
Just remember, guys, Kara is unique and special. Otherwise, who would put up with him on a daily basis? So when you come out to the party and you meet these women here in Las Vegas, they'll say, hey, honey, want to go play some poker tomorrow night? That's not going to work for you. What will work for you, coming up next, our Insider Six Pack, the news you need to know. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Yeah, it's time to pop the top on today's Insider Six Pack. Let's start on the Friday night NBA hardwoods and talk about the Portland Trailblazers. Lack of depth has really turned this Blazers season around after a very strong start. Portland has dropped 4 of their last 5, both straight up and against the spread. There is some light at the end of the tunnel, however. It looks like Marcus Camby is going to be back in the starting lineup for Portland. He's missed each of their last 3 ball games. And Nicholas Batum managed only 9 minutes after getting hit in the eye at Atlanta early in the week. He's also been cleared to return for Portland. But there's still no relief in sight behind Ray Felton, basically the only point guard on that Blazers roster. Felton averaging more than 35 minutes per game already this season on this road trip, and they've been trying to use Jamal Crawford as the backup point guard, and when he comes into the game, and it's really affected Crawford's shooting. He's not a natural point, shooting less than 35% from the floor. This is a sharpshooter. This is a guy that took the Bulls to the wire last year in the postseason. Crawford really struggling in this role right now with the Blazers. If Portland genuinely believes they can make a playoff run, and I think they can, they need to bring a veteran backup point guard into the mix.
Disappointing season in Boston now has another issue to deal with that they really didn't want to have coming. Rajon Rondo, upgraded from doubtful to questionable for tonight against Phoenix, suffered an injured right wrist, got a flagrant foul from Toronto's Linus Klaza on Wednesday night. Rondo didn't practice yesterday, won't attempt to practice in the shoot-around, but because they're going up against Steve Nash tonight, he may try to go out there and compete. Keep in mind that Nash, Wednesday night in New York, 26 points and 11 rebounds as the Suns beat the Knicks. One of the reasons why Rondo wants to get out there, there's nobody behind him. Avery Bradley and Etuan Moore is all Boston has for backup point guards. Teddy was talking about Danny Ainge earlier this week. That was one of the little failures Boston made going into this season. Rondo's having to play way too many minutes. Other guy that we hear will play tonight, Jermaine O'Neal, didn't practice yesterday. He also has a wrist injury. He looks good to go this evening. Probably won't know about Rondo for sure until he actually takes the court. Might not be able to shoot the ball well tonight, but he's the kind of competitor that may be out there just to play defense on Nash.
Tom Pecora is showing real signs of a major turnaround at perennial bottom feeder Fordham. In his first season, the Rams won more games than the previous 2 years combined, and already this year, they've eclipsed last year's win total. But maybe a big step back tomorrow, because their trip to St. Bonaventure, not going to be an easy one. They will be without Chris Gaston, a candidate for the Atlantic 10 Player of the Year Awards, because of a league suspension. Gaston, he's averaging a double-double, 30 block shots, 25 steals. The guy's been an absolute monster, but he was ejected in Wednesday night's win over Rhode Island for throwing a punch with a closed fist and getting into a scuffle with Rhode Island forward Jonathan Holton. Here's the quote from Pecora, quote, "They went to the tape and apparently they said he was smacked in the face with a backhand, but then he swung at the guy with a closed fist. He's got to have more savvy than that. He's got to realize how important he is to us. With greatness comes responsibility. Dave will tell you all about that. You can't lose your composure." Note that only one other Fordham player is averaging in double figures, and Kervin Bristol, the only other player for the Rams that have been reliable on the boards.
Just a quick part two for you guys coming to the party. I just found out during the break where dinner was before they went to the poke room at the MGM. So when you see this hot female and you meet her, don't say, "Dinner at the Sportsbook Deli." Don't do that.
Kara's game, I'm telling you. She's, you know, look, every woman has their foibles and can make you crazy, but the reason that we've been together for more than 15 years, and, you know, she puts up with my crap, and I get to take her out for dinner at the deli. It's good stuff.
Moving right along, let's go to Denton, Texas, and kind of a sad situation there. You know, Johnny Jones has North Texas off of five straight 20-win seasons. Just brought in his best recruiting class ever. Folks, one of the best recruiting classes in the country. And there's no exaggeration there. They've got three kids who stepped right in, were starting, were averaging in double figures. If those freshmen were going to stay together at North Texas throughout their careers, this could have turned into a Sweet 16 team in 2 or 3 years. But now here comes the problem. Two of those freshmen, Chris Jones, Jordan Williams, didn't make grades at the end of the fall. Had a chance to do a little bit of work between semesters, did not grade out properly. They're gone for the end of the season now. Jones stepped right in, 14.1 points a game, 4.7 rebounds, 4.3 assists, dynamite talent. Jordan Williams, 10.9 points a game, 4 rebounds. Along with Mitchell, that was just a terrific, terrific trio. Now here comes the sweat if you're Johnny Jones. You got to keep these guys in school. Will they stay at North Texas, work hard enough in the spring semester to get back on the team next year, or could they run the risk of losing them to transfer? Going to be some sweat time ahead. What would have been the high point of the Jones career, well, might crash a little bit early.
Saturday night, late night Hawaii basketball games don't have the same panache as those late night bailout specials for the Warriors during football season. But still, if you're going to be in play in that New Mexico State Hawaii game tomorrow, you do want to be aware of what's going on with the Warriors right now. Key personnel issues to evaluate. Hawaii was without their senior captains, Jeremiah Ostrowski and Zane Johnson, in last night's 74-70 win over 74-70 loss to Louisiana Tech. Ostrowski was sidelined by a staph infection. Johnson bothered with a bout of the flu. Johnson's the team leading scorer, more than 15 points a game. Ostrowski averages more than twice as many assists per game as any other player on the Hawaii roster. So we're talking about two key players for the Warriors. Let's call Ostrowski doubtful for now, but there is at least a chance that Johnson could return coming off that flu. He was well enough to be in the arena last night, just not well enough to step on the floor.
We did a postmortem earlier this week talking about how college all-star games can be beaten. So, of course, we have to at least touch upon the East-West Shrine game. We've got a little here, but not a lot. Enough maybe for a small play if you need a little entertainment. And nothing wrong with a little entertainment if you have a positive expectation. We like a couple of these quarterbacks for the West in terms of the way they would play in All-Star games. Our favorite quarterbacks in these games are the accurate passers who also have mobility. You've got a couple of them here, Chandler Harnish and Dan Persa. Both guys who are accurate with the ball will fit pretty well into the pro set schemes. But that mobility matters because in these All-Star games, there's no blitzing allowed. It's going to strictly be a four-man rush. If you can get outside the pocket, you can get some positive yardage. Why can't we elevate it strong enough to make it a bet? Largely because neither one of them have any of their own teammates at wide receiver or tight end. If we had had that, and there was that little bit of camaraderie and chemistry, might have been enough to almost think about play of the day type status. We like those two. We like the West a little bit. It'd be a 1.5-point favorite there. But an entertainment bet, nothing more substantial than that.
When we come back, it's time to take a look at the best of the weekend hoops board. It's money time.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David from. You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Okay, guys, time to raise the roof because it's the weekend edition of Money Time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's go to Orlando, where tonight the Magic, about a 4.5-point favorite over the LA Lakers. And Dave, you and I both watched it last night. We saw Mike Brown, the Lakers head coach, leave his starters on the floor on the first night of back-to-backs on the road, and he left them on the floor when they were down 20-plus in the fourth quarter. And, yeah, the Lakers made a little run. They cut it back to 12, or I think even to 10 at one point. They were never in position to win the game. And now we're talking about a Lakers team where Kobe played 41-plus and Powell played 37 and Bynum played 37. What's he thinking?
Here comes the personal post-mortem in this, because that's my thought process last night before I go to bed, is it's your first back-to-back on the road all year. Orlando's tough. You can't beat Miami. And, of course, the Lakers' minutes were already extended for the starters pretty good. Kobe's been playing a couple minutes a game more than he should be. So what was the process? How could someone screw it up that badly? And then, of course, you find out when you wake up, no, he didn't. There was a little bit of method to the madness. He didn't like the way the team competed when Miami jumped out on him early last night. The idea is, well, you know what? We're not going to lose rhythm. We're not going to lose who we are. You're going to go back out there and establish that you're the Lakers. Here's Brown's quote from the aftermath. I wanted to see our guys fight. I didn't care what the score was at that point. They did. So it's a confidence builder for me, and hopefully it's a confidence builder for them too. That matters going forward, because if the Lakers have that fight in them, if there was something in that fourth quarter, that little momentum that they can carry forward, a lot of matchup advantages tonight. We don't necessarily love the Lakers on the road, but at +4.5, that's a pretty fair chance to jump into an Orlando team that we don't like much at all.
Yeah, I mean, the Lakers have yet to cover a spread on the road. Now, I know that they ended up getting a point spread cover in Utah in a game that they won in overtime, but the Lakers were favorites in that game. We like to chart things at the end of regulation. So, according to my records, L.A. 0 for the season ATS on the highway. No track record of success just yet. But Dave mentioned some things about Orlando, or kind of hinted there were some things they don't like about Orlando. I mean, the Magic, they're in one sense, they're an easy team to handicap, because this is what Orlando does. They pound the ball down low to Dwight Howard, and they kick it out to the three-point shooters. When the three-point shooters are hitting, Orlando wins and covers. And when the three-point shooters aren't hitting, Orlando loses and or fails to cover. Certainly, they have not been a juggernaut as a home favorite in recent years. Throughout the Stan Van Gundy era, I like the Magic a lot more on the road catching points than I do at home laying them. And we look at the Lakers' defense. L.A. Holding foes about 31% shooting from three-point range. This Lakers team, their offense hasn't been there. What, 88 points per game on the highway, a little bit shy of 89. Of course, we're not counting that game against the Clippers, which was played, of course, at the Staples Center, but still gets caught a road game for L.A. But with the Lakers team struggling offensively, man, that defense has been there. Seventh in the NBA in three-point shooting percentage allowed. And for Orlando, you know, they don't have the point guards to abuse L.A. at that position. Jameer Nelson, Chris Duhon combined 2 of 19 shooting. Brickfest against San Antonio the other night. Glenn Davis, Big Baby Davis in Baton Rouge for his grandmother's funeral today. Expected back before tip-off. Don't know how he's going to play. Hito Turkoglu is a proverbial game-time decision tonight. Jason Richardson should return after missing the last couple of games with a bone bruise in his left knee. He's going to be matched up against Kobe, not an easy defensive assignment. So definitely issues for Orlando when it comes both offensively and defensively as they try to match up against the L.A. Lakers.
Let's go to Saturday afternoon, Cameron Indoor Stadium on the Duke campus. Big ACC showdown time. We're going to make Duke a projected 8-point favorite over Florida State. And, yeah, that's Duke-Florida State ACC showdown time. Because if you saw what Florida State did to North Carolina last Saturday, you saw an athletic, aggressive, and confident team that showed they belong at home. But when Leonard Hamilton's team is taken to the road this year, it's been a little different story, and that doesn't make you quite as confident when you go to one of the toughest venues in all of sports.
Sure. I mean, the numbers don't lie. They lose 65-49 at Michigan State. This is Florida State I'm talking about. They lose 82-64 at Florida. They lose 79-59 at Clemson. Three downright ugly losses on the highway. You look at the road win. Ooh, they beat Virginia Tech. Well, as we saw Virginia Tech last night, that team folds like a cheap suit or a cheap accordion or whatever you want to fold them. Put pressure on Virginia Tech, they're going down. And that's obviously what happened when they faced Florida State. So the 63-59 win in Blacksburg, not quite as impressive as it might have looked at first glance. It's worth noting, though, Florida State had a little bit of a buffer after that win over North Carolina. They were able to handle Maryland on Tuesday, and that gives them perhaps the right mental edge to go into Duke, because the bottom line, Florida State defensively, they're head and shoulders ahead of what the Blue Devils bring to the table.
Yeah, the numbers are very surprising for the gap between these programs right now. 36.7% shooting allowed by Florida State, 43.6 from Duke. This is an average Duke defense across the board, but a bad Duke defense by their past standards. But it's not just the defense for Duke this year. That lack of athleticism is also hurting them somewhere else. Now, their opening to ACC play has been a little soft. No Florida State yet, no North Carolina yet. But you know what? Those four ACC games, they've lost the boards by minus 11. So if you've been out-rebounded by the lower echelons of the conference, now you're going to face the best rebounding team in the league. Might be tough for Duke to get the kind of margin the markets are going to be calling for.
Let's go to Corvallis, Oregon on Saturday night, where the Oregon State Beavers projected to be about a 6.5-point favorite over USC. And I know we lost a play of the day ticket going against the USC Trojans yesterday, Dave. But boy, the issues are still very much there for USC, particularly against an Oregon State team that's going to push the tempo at every available possibility and put a lot of pressure on a group of USC point guards that don't really handle or distribute the basketball particularly well.
Yeah, one of the things we do a lot in these conference 2-in-3 cycles, and you should be doing it yourself as well, is you look for a setting where you think it's very unlikely that a team is going to cover both ends of a trip. That's why you don't mind losing against Southern Cal last night so much, because now you know you can come right back again on Saturday when that team that's depth shy is even more tired. How did they get it done last night? Maurice Jones actually broke out and had 22 points. But these are scramble points that he makes off of a lot of one-on-one moves. There's just simply no offense to be found. The last two games, Sunday against UCLA, last night against Oregon, they've taken 111 shots. They got 10 assists. That was all. There's not much ball movement. They don't have a lot of places to go. We had talked about the loss of Aaron Fuller. They did lose the boards, 31-24 last night. So now the task for Kevin O'Neill is to try to keep his kids fresh into Saturday, knowing that it's an even tougher transition than usual because they played Sunday night against UCLA. So it's not just 2-3, but it's the extension off of Sunday night that makes it even tougher.
Yeah, and Oregon State, a nice bounce-back win last night. They kind of were up against it. They had back-to-back overtime losses in conference play. That kind of left them a little bit flat, causing the crash in that loss at Arizona State. But they really showed heart and moxie last night. Great team chemistry, and they were able to play against UCLA at their pace, a team that loves to press, a team that loves to run. Five different players reaching double digits in the win over the Bruins. It's an Oregon State team that's been very, very strong at home this year. Wouldn't be surprised at all if they're strong again tomorrow.
Well, as the old song goes, it never rains in Southern California, but it's raining in San Francisco right now. We're going to tell you what that means heading towards Sunday's NFC Championship game as Money Time continues. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's go to Candlestick Park in San Francisco, where right now the 49ers, about a 2.5-point favorite over the New York Football Giants. Total sitting at 41. And Dave, you and I had an opportunity yesterday to, argue about this game. Go back and forth with Chad Millman on ESPN.com, a nice little podcast that's up and available for people if they're interested in listening. But we don't want to send them over to ESPN to get our analysis. Let's give it to him right here on Vegas Sports Day. So, Niners, Giants, what do you like?
Not as much as you. I know that, but you've got a stronger opinion than I do because I don't have a whole lot except for a great fascination as to the way that this game breaks down. San Francisco has been a moneymaker all year and a wise guy breaker for a big part of that year because it came in such untraditional ways. So, talk about fun with numbers with San Francisco. You know, plus 32 in turnovers over 17 games. That's really hard to do. But it's not just a fluke. Now, where a lot of times wise guys will get tripped up, and certainly something we look for, early in the season, teams with big turnover disparities, you look for those to actually level out over the course of the year, because that's usually what they do. There's a lot of luck involved in turnovers. 49ers, there's a lot of design. The offense is structured to not give the ball away. Their 10 turnovers in the regular season tied the all-time best. And they play hard, and they hit hard on defense. That also can shake the ball loose a little bit. Defense and on special teams. You saw New Orleans special teams cough the ball up. But now let's get to one of the most intriguing elements before we get into the numbers and matchups breakdown. So we said it's raining in San Francisco now. Okay, if you hit hard and you try to cause fumbles, and it's going to rain most of the weekend, a wet field with an aggressive team, that creates an interesting scenario for the way this one could play out.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's saying, oh, well, Drew Brees and the Saints turned the ball over, and that's why San Francisco won. San Fran forced those turnovers. Drew Brees is not a quarterback that makes a lot of mistakes. The 49ers were able to force him into mistakes. But I want to talk about the Giants here for a minute because there's been so much talk about how this Giants team is a repeat of the 2017 that won three consecutive road playoff games and went on to upset the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl. And everyone's saying the same core guys are there. This is the same team. No, it's not. The Giants that won the Super Bowl in 2007, defense and rushing. Well, you look at the numbers, and I've got them right here. In the Super Bowl winning season, Brandon Jacobs, 5 yards per carry. Derek Ward, 4.8 yards per carry. They consistently and successfully move the chains on the ground. This year, Brandon Jacobs, 3.8 yards per carry. Ahmad Bradshaw, 3.9. Come between them, more than 500 yards less than what the Jacobs-Ward duo was able to put together in 07. They don't run the football the same way the Super Bowl championship-winning Giants team did. Then we look at defense. the Giants' defensive numbers. You remember what that defense did in the postseason. They were dominant. Dominant in the quarterback's face on every play. You watched the Giants play Green Bay last week. Guess what? If the Packers bring their A game, the Giants lose. They may still cover, but they lose that game. Green Bay dropped passes. They missed open receivers. They made the Hail Mary pass for halftime when Don Capers screwed up his defensive call. All of those things, Green Bay mistakes. Defensively this year, the Giants mid-20s, mid-20s in points allowed, mid-20s in yardage allowed. That's out of 32 NFL teams. That's not an elite-level defense. Eli Manning's been great. The Giants' passing game is solid. The Giants' pass rush is solid. They got issues in the secondary. They got issues running the football. This is not the same team that won the Super Bowl. It's that team 4 years later.
Or maybe not. Because here's your problem in terms of breaking down the Giants. A lot of injuries this year. So, yeah, over the course of the season, the numbers aren't going to add up well for a couple of reasons. Now, one, we mentioned this on last week's show in breaking down the Giants. The fact that they were dead last in the NFL in rushing this year, probably the most meaningless statistic that there could be out there. Part of it was injuries, but part of it's schedule. Giants played the number two schedule in the NFL. And if you want to talk about teams that would be classified as NFL heavyweights, Green Bay, New England, New Orleans, the 49ers, they played all of them on the road. It was a brutal, brutal schedule that would not allow numbers to be created very well. But now what happens down the stretch? Giants got healthy again. Look at these last four games and look at the quality of competition. The Cowboys and the Jets, two good teams that were just a bounce from making the playoffs. The bounce would have been if they could have beaten the Giants, and they couldn't. And then the two playoff games against the Falcons and against the Packers. Four tough games, all under pressure, all against very good teams. 121-50. The Giants won those four games by 71 points. That's almost 18 full points a game against very good competition. Yeah, that is the team that won that Super Bowl a couple of years ago. And that leads us to the conundrum we have with San Francisco. There were so many turnovers involved that sometimes it was difficult to measure how good the 49ers real were. Well, they only had five games all year against playoff teams. They got outgained in every one. They won the turnover battle by a collective plus 10. And sometimes turnovers skew the stat columns a little bit, so you don't have to gain as many yards. You can play them more conservatively. But they got outgained in every one of those five games. And we're not necessarily talking about powers. One of those games was against Cincinnati. They played a beat-up Pittsburgh team, yet got outgained 2-1 by the Steelers. Got some very fortunate bounces. So that's the issue we have here. The Giant full season or the current Giants. Between now and Sunday, we're going to see how we weight that out a little bit. But one of my concerns, of course, is if it's a wet field and candlestick, 49ers can deal with that much more easily than the Giants. They're much more accustomed to that, and it's going to be a wet, sloggy type of field. The other issue with the Giants, though, we'd like a plus three. We're not going to see one.
Yeah. You talk about the yardage issues for San Francisco, how they've been outgained by all these opponents. Well, as we know, some statistics lie. Some statistics lie very, very well. What's a hidden factor in San Francisco losing those yardage battle? They're dominant special teams. Dominant. When we talk about the combination of David Akers kicking the football and Andy Lee punting the football, we talk about the return game they've had with Ted Ginn Jr. And Kendall Hunter returning kicks and punts. They win the field position war every single week. And when we compare those guys to the Steve Weatherford and Lawrence Tynes from the Giants. You know, the Giants haven't had a kick return or punt return longer than 40 yards all year. Tynes has missed a makeable field goal. It hasn't mattered, but he's missed a makeable field goal in each of the last three games. Not a guy who I would necessarily trust. And Weatherford, his net punt yards is 5 yards less than Lee. So every time there's an exchange of punts, San Fran wins 5-10 yards. And that adds up when you look at the total yardage figures at the end of the game. And there's one more little stat here, and this is way under the radar. If you're not a serious sports bettor, you're probably not even aware of it. Certainly you're not going to see this on SportsCenter. Alex Smith playing at home over the last 3 years, and again, he was banged up, he was benched by Mike Singletary, he's gone through, three coaches in that three-year span. 16-1-1 against the spread, his last 18 at Candlestick. He's winning games, he's covering numbers, He's playing good. Game on the line, fourth quarter. Last week, what did Alex Smith do? He played like a superstar. So did Vernon Davis. San Fran's right there. They're an undervalued commodity, Dave. At least that's my 2 cents. I know you're looking for three the other way.
Well, I'm not sure if they're undervalued anymore, because at 2.5, that's a pretty good valuation. When you look at the Giant body of work, look at the 49er body of work, they're saying the teams are pretty even, and they are. We're not told on Alex Smith yet, though. That spread record, that's the Giants. I mean, the 49er spread record. It's not necessarily Alex Smith, because if you go back through it, I'm not sure how many of those games you put on his shoulders. What we haven't seen this year from Smith is a lot of adversity. Came through very well in the New Orleans game when they had to. The only other game all year where there was much adversity, where they had to go out and try to make something happen, that Thursday night game against Baltimore, you saw that one. They still haven't gotten to 200 yards yet in that game. That was just a dead clunker performance. What Smith has been given all year, one is the Harbaugh offense is a great fit for Smith. Ideal setup. So he is indeed a better quarterback than he was before. But, boy, he's been given great game management all season. We talked about how good the Giants' schedule was. 49ers' schedule, number 26 in the NFL. A lot of weak competition, especially in that division. So you got a good defense. Great turnover ratio. You're not challenged much to go out and make something happen. And that might be where the downfall comes in the fourth quarter. If this game's tied in the fourth, and you're going to say, Eli, you get one possession. Alex Smith, you get one possession. I want Eli in that setting. Here's a guy who has won this year at Green Bay, won this year at New England. If you can do that, then you're not going to be bothered or intimidated by any venue anywhere. Similar to what we said with the Ravens going into New England. You got Ed Reed. You got Ray Lewis. You're not intimidated in a road setting. Given where the Giants have been able to win games on the road, they're not bothered here. This may be one of those times where Alex Smith may have to produce, but it won't be the New Orleans defense out there that he's got to produce against.
Yeah, the Giants have a better pass rush than New Orleans. They can, you know, rush, get pressure on opposing quarterback with four, whereas the Saints had to send five and six, and those blitzes hurt them. But Giants' secondary is not better than the Saints. No way, no how. You saw wide receivers running free all game against Green Bay. What happened? Aaron Rodgers was a little bit off. His receivers was a little bit off. The timing wasn't there. Maybe that happens in the rain. And again, it's going to be slog. It's going to be a muck fest. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. But you watch the way San Francisco hits defensively, and you watch the plays they're starting to make downfield. I give the Niners a legitimate edge defensively against the Giants. And frankly, I think that's all they're going to need. But that's not where we're going for play of the day, Dave, because you and I don't agree on this game. There's one, however, that we do agree on, correct?
You're going to get some money in your pockets before the NFL games kick off on Sunday. Let's go back to Corvallis, Oregon, and look at the Oregon State Beavers over Southern Cal. We talked about the Southern Cal issues on the first side of this equation, the 2-3 being very difficult for them. This is the worst team in the conference for them to face in this setting. Oregon State will press. They'll extend the defenses. Those points that Maurice Jones got last night, there's no basketball Jones going on here for him. Those traps and presses will force him to give the ball away. Oregon State put five guys in double figures against UCLA last night, averaging 87 points a game at home in conference play, in regulation. Southern Cal can't match that tempo. They don't have that scoring punch. Oregon State wears them out in the second half, comfortably wins the game in double figures.
And that's going to wrap it up for the weekend preview edition of Vegas Sports Day. For Malinsky, I'm Sobranski. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll see you again on Monday.